I'm going to read now in the Old Testament from the first chapter of Genesis. And we'll read through to chapter 2, verse 3. Let's ask God's help in our reading. Almighty God, who made the heavens and the earth, grant us by your grace the understanding that as we read these words of your greatness and your goodness, that we might the better praise you and serve you all our days. We ask this as we read your word in Christ's name. Amen. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw the light that it was good. And God divided the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. Then God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." Thus God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament, and it was so. And God called the firmament heaven. So the evening and the morning were the second day. Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the third day. Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day. Then God said, "Let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens." So God created great sea creatures, and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded, according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth." So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind." And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. Then God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of all the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, to you it shall be for food. Also, to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Then God saw everything that he had made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth and all the host of them were finished. And on the seventh day God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from all his work which God had created and made. The next chapter of the Westminster Confession of Faith that we look at is the chapter dealing with creation. And we're going to look at that chapter this week and then again next week as well. What does the Bible say about creation? Essentially, one thing. God made everything out of nothing. As we've been looking at ancient Christian writers in the afternoon service, and we have found in writer after writer a quick summary of Christian teaching, I hope you noticed how often and how consistently it began with God created everything out of nothing. The Apostles' Creed begins, I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth. The Bible begins with, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. John chapter 1, the prologue, begins with, God made everything that was made through the Word. The real alternative in human history to what the Bible teaches about the creation can be summed up sometimes with the word paganism, sometimes with the word animism, sometimes just with the gods of nature. Most people are at least dimly familiar with ancient Greek and Roman mythology. There is a god dealing with the ocean. There is a god dealing with thunder. There's a god dealing with love. There's a god dealing with war. Now that religion is dead. It has no spiritual life left in it. All we have are memories of it. But around the world, various versions of that still have the hearts and the minds of billions of people. I have at home a series of 6 books. I bought one and was so impressed with it, I bought the other 5. The book that I bought that I was impressed with was entitled What Your First Grader Should Know. And you can probably figure out the title of the second book. In case you can't, I'll tell you. What Your Second Grader Should Know. If I were starting over again, not a good idea. If I were starting over again and raising children and doing homeschooling, I would use these books among others. I'm impressed with them. And when our grandchildren come to visit, they like me to read from these books to them. Only certain parts. When I try to get into the mathematics part of what they should know, they quickly steer me back to the stories. But anyway, I've read through these, and there's one of the books has an account of ancient Norse mythology, as we now call it. But it's ancient Norse religion, from which the names of a number of our days of the week come. Thursday is from Thor, and Friday is from Frida, and so on. And it explains what each of these gods was about the struggles of the gods to create, the struggles of the gods against each other, and it sounds very much like ancient Greek mythology, ancient Indian mythology, stories from the American Indians on this continent. And the Bible is so different. There is, for example, in the beginning, it probably doesn't strike you as strange because you're Christians and you know the Bible. But it's very different from all of the different panoply of gods in these different nations. There's no biography of God. Did you ever notice that? It's just, in the beginning, God. No biography. No previous accounts of struggle with the giants. No previous accounts of goings-on and shenanigans on Mount Olympus. There is no biography of God. There's nothing behind Him. There's nothing before Him. There's nothing prior to Him. There is no struggle with chaos in the... There is no struggle to create. There is no echo of God in nature. There's nothing in nature that you look at and you say, there is something of God there. If I were to summarize, what is the point of Genesis chapter 1? All right, just take the entire chapter and summarize it as the point. The point is this, that everything that the pagans fear and worship, God made. I'm going to say that again. Everything that the pagans or the animists fear and worship, God made. When missionaries go to isolated tribes at this point or unreached peoples, that's the first thing they have to establish, that God made everything. Maybe you fear the sun or you worship the sun. The sun's just a creature like you are. Maybe you fear and worship the moon. The moon is just a creature like you are. Maybe you fear and worship crocodiles. The crocodile is just a creature like you are. God made the crocodile. God made the sun. God made the moon. God is the creator of everything in the world. There is no place to worship anything that He's created. Romans chapter 1. What is the big, big, big mistake of the nations? Romans chapter 1. Paul goes right through it. He says, they should know God. God does reveal His power and His strength and all that He's made. But they choose to set aside the worship of God and worship the created things instead. And then there's kind of a downward hierarchy of worshiping gods like men, gods like animals, gods like the volcanoes. I get National Geographic. Great pictures. Just had an article a couple of issues ago about a volcano in the island of Java and about the villages around the volcano. And they worship the god of the volcano. And what they want to accomplish in their worship of the god of the volcano is that He won't be angry at them and spew out ashes and fire and molten rock at them. And so whenever there is some rumblings from the volcano, they say, how can we appease the god of the volcano? That's the religion that underlies Hinduism in India. I know in our school books we read about Hinduism. That's a pretty rarefied philosophy. You go down to the ordinary village level, it's like I'm just describing. It's what is the actual religion of a fair number of people who are nominal Muslims, a fair number who are nominal Christians. When we were in Cyprus, we saw something of the same kind of ancient animist and idolatrous religion there in village life. Everything that the animists fear and worship, everything the pagans fear and worship, God made. Now, what is the goal of the worship of God? Well, the scriptures tell us that the goal of the worship of God is that we would be at peace with Him. Because we start off at war because of our sin and rebellion, and we need somehow to be at peace with Him. And it turns out the only way we can be at peace with God is through Jesus Christ, who makes peace between us and Him. But what's the goal of pagan worship? It's harmony with nature and magic ways of which you control the gods and make the gods of this nature or that piece of nature not hurt you. There is a particular Hebrew word in Genesis chapter 1 that appears five times in Genesis chapter 1. It's the Hebrew word bara, And it is used to mean make out of nothing, as opposed to make with something where you already have materials. If Alex goes down to our basement and starts working on something for a physics lab experiment, he takes a piece of wood here, he takes a piece of metal here, he takes some wire, he makes it, but he works with pre-existing materials. The word bara points to making something out of nothing. You can't do that. I can't do that. I don't ever make anything out of nothing. I've got to start with something. But in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. This word is something out of nothing. You have the same idea in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 3. By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. Another way of saying, what's out there wasn't made from what's out there. Energy wasn't made from energy. Matter wasn't made from matter. They weren't made from each other. God made them out of nothing. Now, the other uses are in verse 21. You can check it. It has to do with the sea monsters. And verse 27, three times, where the creation of man is concerned. We'll look at that next week. Now, I don't wish to get into a careful exegesis or explanation of the first couple of verses, but you'll notice that it says, after God says that God created everything in the beginning, that at the beginning the earth was without form, the earth was empty, darkness was there, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the deep. There is some hint in Genesis 1, maybe a little more than a hint, that God is not a totally unitary God. The Spirit of God was hovering over the faces of the deep. Verse 26, God says, let us make man in our image. And then you have John chapter 1 that we read, that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and nothing was made without Him. The word here for God is actually plural, Elohim. In the beginning, Elohim, God, or, well, it's God, but it's somehow plural. God created the heavens and the earth. And as we looked a couple of weeks ago in connection with God, the Christian teaching of the Trinity, so firmly rejected by the Muslims and so firmly criticized by the Jews today, that doctrine has to be there or something like it for us to understand that God was love and communication before He made the world. The love in the world is in His image. And He had no need to make the world in order to have something to love. And you have hints of that right here in Genesis as God says, let us make man in our image. Now, of course, most of chapter 1 is taken up with the 6 days of creation. And there is a regular rhythm in how these days are described. First, there's the phrase, let there be. Absolute command. How is it that God acts on the matter and the energy that He created? And on this, of course, the scriptures are completely silent. Simply, God commanded and it was so. And that's the second phrase, the phrase, and it was so. If I had thought it was worthwhile for us, I would have brought in what your fourth grader should know, which is where the account of Norse mythology is in these books. And there's a long account of the great struggle with chaos in order to build the heavenly abode of the gods, along with a fair amount of trickery and deceit. You get the same thing in most pagan mythologies, but not here in the scriptures. God acts with complete mastery and sovereignty. And it was so. Where do you get an echo of that in the scriptures? And it was so. I think there's nothing more similar to this than Jesus in a boat on Lake Galilee with his disciples, and he fell asleep because he was tired and a storm came up. And in the midst of the storm, as the boat was beginning to be threatened by the waves and the wind to sink, the disciples woke up Jesus and they said to him, "Don't you care that we're about to die?" And Jesus stood up and rebuked the wind and the waves and said, "Be still." And they were still. And the disciples said, "Who is this that even the wind and the waves obey him?" And it was so. Be still. Complete mastery and control. There's a teacher that I used to teach with for years. If you went by her class, it didn't matter who was in her class. The class, every kid was always in a seat and quiet and silent. And I talked to teachers who talked next to her. They said she never, ever shouted. And of course, young teachers would say, "How does she do that?" But I can tell you for a fact, I never heard her in 20 years shout at a class. And I never heard a kid misbehave more than once. That's the teacher's ideal of absolute mastery and sovereignty. No struggle with chaos. Just, I'm the boss, and you do what I say. And they do. Actually, the rest of us did too. And it was so. Third thing, the Lord names what he created. Now, in the ancient Near East, and we have a little bit of that today, the act of naming is a statement, "I have authority over you." For example, when Nebuchadnezzar captured and took back captive some of the princes of Israel, one of the first things he does to Daniel is name him Daniel. Only Daniel was his Hebrew name, he names him Belteshazzar. Now, we know Daniel still by his Hebrew name, but his three friends, the Babylonian names are the ones we know. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're all Babylonian names. And we have forgotten the Hebrew names. But in any case, Nebuchadnezzar says, "I'm the king. I don't care what your parents named you. You're mine now, and here are your new names." I actually know some teachers that do that to their students. A kid comes in the class, and the teacher gives a new name to each kid while they're in that class. And it's effective, especially the foreign language teachers do it. No self-definition. No saying, "This is who I am." The son does not say to God, "I think I'd prefer to be flippant." God says, "You are the son." God says to man, "You are man." Fourth thing, God's evaluation. It was good. Good, it was in harmony with him. An awful lot of pagan religions are in the end very pessimistic. The Bible is quite optimistic. In the end, all things work out well. In the end, all things work out for good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. In the beginning, God made all things good. There is evil, there is trouble in the world. It was not there in God's original plan. It will not be there in the end after all things are complete. And the last part is, an evening and morning were the first day, the second day, and so on. Task done in a day, ready for the next assignment. Now, what happens on the days? Well, there's a pattern to that in the telling here. On the first 3 days, God gives form to the world. On the first day, he separates light from darkness. He makes a distinction. On the second day, the waters are separated in the heavens from the waters on the earth, in the firmament and under the firmament. Note, God made the heavens where the pagans say the gods dwell, and did it without struggle. And third day, God separated the oceans from the dry land, which he made fertile so that they brought forth vegetation and plants and trees and so on. To understand the arrangement in these verses, It should be observed that to the Hebrew way of thinking, plant life was not life. All right, we have our biology, and as they thought of life, they thought of animals as life, but not of trees and vegetables as life. So on the first 3 days, you have the stage set for what will then live in the space that God has made. Light and darkness, heavens and earth, dry land and sea, and vegetation. That's the first 3 days. What happens on the second 3 days? Well, in the second 3 days, there's a pretty close parallelism to the first 3 days. On the fourth day, God takes care of light in, you might say, detail. He puts the sun in the sky. He puts the moon in the sky. He puts the stars there to separate night from day, light from darkness. I can't say it so often enough. The sun is a creature. How often people have worshipped the sun, and the Bible say the sun is just another one of God's creatures. Same with the moon. Fifth day, God fills the waters of the sea with the fish and the air with the birds. Even the great creatures of the deep are simply God's creatures. And this is the second use of that Hebrew word bara, which means to create absolutely. What are the huge sea creatures mentioned in verse 21? No agreement by biblical scholars, ranging all the way from crocodiles as guesses to really, really big crocodiles as guesses to whales to now extinct huge creatures. Nobody has a good handle on what was in mind there exactly. On the sixth day, animals on land. Domestic animals, creeping things, the beasts of the field, meaning the wild animals. We have our own way of dividing up the animal world, don't we? And we've all learned it in biology, and we take almost that taxonomy of animals for granted. But, you know, if you're actually out there in villages living with animals, animals fall into three rather neat categories. There are the useful animals that you can work with. Those are donkeys, oxen, we would say dogs, although not all societies would say dogs, horses, domesticated animals is our phrase. And then there are the wild animals that roam out in the fields that you can't tame, and things like lions and muskrats and so on. And then there are the animals that creep along the ground, the snakes and the lizards and so on. And that pretty well categorizes animals as you run across them, and categories of reptile and mammal. That's our modern way, and it's a different way of categorizing. Same thing with, I know for a long time I was a little critical of the scriptures because it didn't distinguish between fish and whales. Until I realized that their category fish is just everything that swims in the water. And the mammal category of whale versus the fish category of trout, that's just a different way of dividing up the animal world. Now, what's true about all the animals? They reproduce after their kind. All the way through Genesis, God is described as a God who established boundaries. Light here, darkness there. Heavens here, earth here. Sea there, dry land there. It's horrible chaos and disaster and judgment when God breaks over the boundaries. That's what the flood does. The flood erases the boundaries between the sea and the land. And that is sure our experience, isn't it? Have any of you ever had a dog as a pet at home give birth to a cat? It would be National Enquirer material, wouldn't it? Right there in the supermarket, if you had a dog give birth to a cat. Likewise, if you happen to keep a hippopotamus as a pet, Chances are good it is not going to give birth to a mouse. Each animal reproduces itself after its own kind. I was looking back recently at a little discussion of Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species. And it's a brilliantly written book. Some of you know the title. And the way Darwin proceeds is actually by analogy. He goes by analogy of the fact that you can breed different kinds of pigeons and different kinds of chickens and get all this great variety. And then by analogy, he says, what we do with our farm animals in producing lots of different kinds of dogs, lots of different kinds of pigeons. He works with pigeons for a lot for some reason. I don't know why pigeons fascinating. And chickens. So nature does with all the animals. But you notice the analogy there? This is not proof. This is analogy. And what we do intelligently, he then does a little sleight of hand and says, and nature does without meaning to. There is continuing controversy about the Darwinian and the neo-Darwinian based on the knowledge of genetics, evolution. The reason I think there's continuing controversy is I think it is a quite unproven hypothesis. And it's quite contrary to our common experience. Our common experience actually matches Genesis extremely well. Cats produce cats, dogs produce dogs, chimpanzees never produce orangutans, and people produce people. Now, the climax of the creation in verses 26 through 31 is that God made man, and here you have that word make out of nothing three times in verse 26. God made man male and female. God made human sexuality very much like animal sexuality. The animals are male and female, so are we. There is to God no goddess consort the way there is in pagan religions. There is no female counterpart to a male god. In fact, God is neither male nor female. And therefore, human sexuality is not an object of worship the way it was in ancient Canaanite religion and in lots of other religions around the world. Man is made both from the ground and in the image of God. Both part of the creation and also somehow transcending creation so that we can look at it. And what does Adam do with the animals as God brings them to him? He names them, just as God named everything in chapter 1. Made in the image of God. I want to talk about that next week. Much discussion as to what is intended. Just a quick summary here. Knowledge, and we are self-conscious. Moral, and we rule the animals and the earth. And I liken mankind to God's signature in the creation. You know, when an artist finishes a painting, he'll often put his signature there at the bottom. You know, Rembrandt or something like that. We are in some ways God's signature in the creation, made in his image. God addresses us, and he addresses the whole creation and says, look, I've given you the vegetation for food. I blessed you with fruitfulness. And the summary is, it was all very good. Optimism again versus insecurity in the universe. Now, chapter 3, verse 2 says God was finished. There's a lot of speculation about the further evolution of man into some new super creature. There's no hint of anything like that in the scriptures, nor in human history either. And any effort to try to make it come about is going to produce huge and horrible evil. God ceased from working on the seventh day, Bless the day and set it apart. The fourth commandment says, remember. And that word, remember, means to honor it, respect it, treat it as separate, treat it as different. In Mesopotamia, where Abraham came from, the week was divided into 7-day cycles according to the moon. The moon, of course, has a 28-day cycle, and so you divide it by four and you get 4 7-day cycles. And in Ur and Haran, the two cities from which Abram came, the seventh day was the unlucky day of the week. And God says, you got it backwards. The seventh day is the good day of the week. It is the day on which I rested, beneficial and good. And no connection to the moon here in Genesis. Who is God? The scriptures reveal him, first of all, as the one creator of all things, who brings order to the world he made, establishes it, and fills emptiness with abundance, and has made us in his image, moral, able to communicate, able to stand above nature while still part of it, and in good harmony with him while he rules and we under him rule his creation. No hint yet of the evils and sorrow now present in our world, and it will be in 2 weeks that we look at the fall of man and how sin came into the world. Next week, more at the creation of man. Please turn this off.